What's up, dude? You gonna make any more noises for me? I was trying, but he was trying to talk with us, but I couldn't get it. There we go. It's another Mobile Hero Spotlight with Jennifer Kaur from CISA. I'm going to full disclose. I'm A, wearing a hat with a chicken on it, which seemed appropriate if you have a hat with a chicken on it, that this is a place you would wear it. And B, I have two hard-boiled Diamond Farm eggs for my lunch today. And we are at Diamond Farm in Wendell.
Hi, I'm Tessa White Diamond.
Annie Diamond Bucci.
And who's that?
That's Chugs.
Chugs! Do I want to know how he got that name?
Well, it's kind of a sad story. We had twins a couple years ago, and his mom passed away, so we had to bottle feed them. And so him and his sister, we would bottle feed, and he would come. He would immediately finish the bottle within 30 seconds. And his sister, aptly named Gracie, was very graceful with her bottle, and he would butt her out of the way and try and get her food.
Sounds like a UMass student.
It sounds like typical siblings.
Yeah. Diamond Farm is a legacy family farm. I can tell by your shirt, but our listeners can't see it. How long has this farm been going here, Annie?
We have been on this land for 90 years.
Wow, that's amazing. Congratulations. 1936.
1936, yeah. Dad bought the land, and the Diamond legacy started.
Was it always chickens, or did it start out somewhere else and then end up in chickens and other poultry?
When I was a child, we did chickens for meat, and then grade school, it switched over to chicken for eggs. And then in 1989, we were looking for something else to do, and we started doing turkeys. Then people had our fresh turkeys, and they were like, well, you're a chicken farm. Can't you raise meat chickens? And so we did.
You went back to the meat chickens, too.
We went back to the meat chickens, and we also have grass-fed beef here.
So, Annie, you're second generation, right?
Yes.
And then you're third generation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
After a brief stint that we heard about, there was a pause in this in-depth farming.
I grew up on the farm. We have about 175, 200 acres, and so I grew up in one of the houses here, always helped out on the farm, but never imagined that farming was going to be my thing. Went away to college, did social work for maybe a dozen years, and wasn't really getting fulfilled, was kind of getting burnt out, and so I talked to the family and I said, hey, is there a job for me? Do you have room? Do you have stuff for me to do? They kind of laughed at me and said, of course, come on back, and that was 9 years ago.
No shortage of things to do.
None at all.
So what's your main role then, Tessa?
Learning everything.
Uh-huh.
The farm for many years was run by my mother Anne, my uncle Peter, and my aunt Faith. They took it over from my grandparents, and so I've been trying to learn what they've been doing for the past 40, 50 years. I'm the only person in my generation that's come back full-time. I certainly have a ton of cousins who still help out, lots of aunts, uncles, but for my generation, it's on me.
Can I ask about just trends over time? 90 years is a long, not that you saw all 90 of those, but just what you're seeing change.
Annie?
Sure. One thing is the farmers are being held in really cool, like, you know, I had a doctor once say to me, thank you for what you're doing. And I said, you're welcome. And I'm trying to figure out all the things that I'm doing, what he's talking about. And then I said, could you just tell me what you're talking about? And he said, you are a farmer and you bring such good, delicious, healthy food to the community. And he said, that really takes a special person. And so that was really cool because I grew up in the age where farmers were looked down upon. So that's a huge change. And the whole buy local and wanting to support your local farms for lots of reasons, that has been a huge shift.
And CISA has a lot to do with that, the whole be a local hero, buy locally grown.
There's kind of an intimate connection between Diamond Farm and CISA in that Peter served on the CISA board for many years, and then 20 years later, Tessa serving on the board.
You're on the board right now?
I am. I did not know that Peter had been on the board.
I think so. In the 2000s. That is my understanding. I was not there.
Well, do you want to show us around the farm a little bit?
Yeah.
I've been to the farm store several times, and you can go in there. Khalees and I just got a cup of coffee. And
I
then
my Thanksgiving turkey from here.
Oh,
it was awesome.
And there's a lot of times there's pot pies, which I love getting from here, too.
Absolutely going to be my lunch today because I forgot to bring mine.
Luckily, I have two hard-boiled Diamond Farm eggs. I can give you one. I also have an Atkins sausage.
About the store, sort of, you have so many products available in the store now and how that has evolved over time.
Well, the store started, my grandfather was alive and it was self-serve and he passed away in 2000. So before he passed away, we only had limited amount of options then, but now we have I don't even know how many meals. I couldn't count them on one hand. Two hands. I have to bring my toes in there, too, and maybe Monty's and other people. You know, we do anything from the pot pies that you can find out in other retailers, the soups, cold turkey, turkey chili, but we also have things just exclusively at our farm store. So we have beef lasagna, shepherd's pie,
chicken Moroccan pie, chicken mushroom pie, sliced turkey breast and gravy, both regular gravy and gluten-free gravy.
And these are all like to-go items?
These are fresh and or frozen.
Where are those being processed? Right here on the farm?
Oh, yeah. Everything's done here.
That whole added value thing is something we hear a lot about from farmers, about how important an item that is to keep farms afloat. So the fact that you have that all going on right here is great. And this farm is huge. We're walking by what looks like a football field length barn that's got solar all over it. And then there are a bunch of other barns, grain silos.
Can we talk about those barns a little bit? Because I saw on this one, this giant one that we're passing right now, it said laying hens and broilers. How are you dividing all of these buildings? Like, how are they differentiated from each other?
Years ago, that coop was just for our laying hens, but we've since downsized our flock, so half the birds are on our laying hens, and they're literally on half the coop, half the side, and the other half is our broiler chickens.
And we're coming on the one that says turkeys.
So guess what's inside?
Turkeys!
Turkeys!
Yeah, good job.
I noticed patterns.
How many turkeys do you think you have here, Tessa?
Right now, I'd say 2,000.
Wow.
Whoa!
Hello, turkeys.
Is it not too early to order your turkey?
A little too early. We're getting our stuff, our turkeys in order.
Instead of your ducks in a row?
Right. We're getting our turkeys in a row. So I'd say by mid-September, we are having our 90th anniversary celebration on Saturday, September 12th. And my goal is to have the order form ready for that, so when folks come, they can put their order in on the tablet.
So what kind of turkeys are these?
This is a breed called Nicholas Breed. They're from West Virginia. They were hatched out the end of June.
They're about 6 weeks old right now, 6-7 weeks old.
And you hatch them here, or do you? I had to do the 6-7 thing. I tried to be quiet about it, but Tessa noticed it. My children, who if they're listening to this, also did the same thing. Are you hatching them here, or are they being hatched and you're bringing them up as chicks?
No, we get them at day old. Hatching chicks is a whole other ball of wax, and we already do too much, so I don't want to get into that.
Yeah, it's funny because we've talked to a bunch of different type of poultry farmers, and they all kind of say the same thing. Let somebody else hatch them. We'll take them right after they're hatched.
It's just a whole different science, you know, because for, like, the egg layers, we want females. And so we wouldn't know what to do with all these male roosters.
Again, one of the bottlenecks that we keep encountering here in Western Mass, especially with poultry farmers, no one does the laying part, the egg part. All of those eggs come from elsewhere and usually outside of New England.
Yeah.
There's quite a large farm that we, in Ovid, New York, that we go up several times a year and purchase the babies for layers. But that is... Is New York, New England?
No.
Okay.
Well,
no.
So
thank God.
Close, you know.
It's very close. Really.
It's so beautiful.
But no, and
there.
They will also tell you no.
New Jersey, you don't get to be part of it either.
I guess I should know that for all the years I did the Big E. That they were telling New York building.
Where's the New York building?
Yeah.
So this is the abattoir, I would imagine, right? If we want to use more coded language.
Dressing room or undressing room, I guess.
It's going to bring a whole new meaning to the dressing room at NEPM. We don't have hoods where we can put our necks in.
This is set up for the chickens.
Yeah.
We take the live bird and take it by its feet and put it in upside down. We cut the throat so it bleeds out here.
Mm-hmm.
And we put it in this machine, which is a scalder. So it's a dip. This basket rotates around into hot water. It loosens up the feathers. And so then we take them from here and we put them in here. Cold water will go down the sides. It starts the cool down process, but it also pulls off almost all the feathers. It's wonderful when it's working right.
And this thing whirs, right? So it's almost like a washing machine of feather removal. There it whirs.
So when they're when they're going around, they're spinning. They're spinning and tumbling and getting undressed.
Yeah.
How many birds are you processing at a time?
For meat chickens, we do 350 is what the batch starts with. It's usually about 330. You know, we do lose a few, but not too bad. When we do the fowl, the old laying hens, it's usually a batch of 500. And then turkeys, when we're doing turkeys, it'll either be anywhere from 300 up to 500 a day, depending upon the size, the crew, the machinery, how people are feeling. We try to be cognizant of everybody's, where they are, and so if somebody wants to tap out, years ago we would just keep on pushing through, and we realized that we hurt our bodies really bad, and so we try to be respectful of how people are feeling.
How many people do you have in this room on processing day?
Processing day, it's usually about 10 to 12.
And are those folks who do just that task for you, or are they folks who do other chores other times, and this is just what you all do on processing day?
For chickens, it's pretty much the crew that we have year-round. We do have some other folks who come in and help us as needed. For turkeys, though, we need a lot more than what we have because we do fresh Thanksgiving turkeys, and so it takes more than just what we have.
Is there anything that can be done with fowl feathers? What happens to them all? Are they compostable, or what? You know, because they all get flown off in this cool feather washing machine.
So they get composted. All of the guts, the feathers, bones, all get composted. Same thing with our kitchen scraps. Mm-hmm. Goes in there and so composted. And then we sell the compost, so you can get it either by the bag or the yard.
Oh, nice.
I'm seeing a very sort of circular systems here in terms of everything getting used. So I'm sure that your layers, they get processed and they get turned into soup or pot pies or otherwise.
The layers, we actually can sell them. It's called New York dressed, where they're...
Not from New England.
So we bleed them out, take the feathers off, and the customers that buy those lots of times are immigrants. They're used to having... You know, birds out back where they're dual use, where they want to have a chicken, they go get it. So they are tougher because they're older. They're well over a year old, whereas the meat birds are under 8 weeks old.
We've seen Reed's processing, which is entirely different and like a spaceship. When I think of processing areas, this is more of what I think of. Yeah. But I haven't seen like an overhead washing system like this. Like, this is really cool.
Yeah, there's a bunch of...
giant chicken shower.
There's some plumbing on the ceiling and then all these pipes and rubber hoses coming off of it, yeah.
Right. So normally, Tess and I, this is where we stand across from each other.
To your exact station.
Assume the position.
We're ready.
So we'll have a crew here. They take them from the scalder, from the picker, and then cut the feet off, do the neck and the crop and the scent sac and cut around the vent. And then it comes to Tessa and I, and we do the gutting, and then it goes down, and another crew will take care of doing the final picking, choosing whether it's a premium grade, and the not premium grade we cut up to be used in our like soups and stews and pot pies and products.
You also have an incredible collection of knives over here. Mm. It looks pretty awesome.
Seems like essential.
So after this gets done, we put them in those chill tanks. We have them half filled with water and then a bunch of ice put in, because if they're put in to an ice flush, their cells close and they won't absorb water. If you just put them in cold water, they absorb water. Mm-hmm. And then we let them chill down to under 41 degrees. And then that V-rack over there, it's pretty cool.
It is.
We hang the birds from them so they dry a little bit, and then we can do the packaging.
Did you guys custom make that, or did you?
Some of the stuff actually came from Keach's Farm in Gill, Franklin Turkey Farm. The year we started doing it, 1989, we went to see them because we didn't want to step on toes. But the Extension Service was suggesting that we try fresh turkeys. But again, we're cognizant of farming, and we don't want to step on anybody's toes. So we went to see them, and they were like, actually, last year was our last year we're doing it. We're not doing it. If you want to buy some of our equipment, we can.
Uh-huh.
And we did.
We started raising turkeys in 1989, started with 500, and now we do 5,000 to 6,000 a year.
Wow.
And you're selling them all fresh, or you're freezing them out?
No. We used to do everything in November, and now we realize that with some of these big schools, and also because we're doing so much more value-added, we can have those frozen. And so what's wonderful is we can do it earlier in the season. As you can see, these fields look beautiful. They're not all beat up and have a lot of turkeys and turkey manure on them. We can spread them out because we've already processed and we've already delivered to UMass and Mount Holyoke a bunch of turkey. And Deerfield Academy actually took some.
How much longer does it take to raise? Like, you mentioned that meat chickens take a flower under 8 weeks, but how long does it take for turkeys? Is it the same amount of time or a little bit longer?
A lot longer. The smallest turkeys that we'll have, we raise them like 12, 13 weeks. they can be as old as 16, 17 weeks.
Yeah, we used to do them as old as 26 weeks, and that's when we were getting the 42 to 48 pounders.
Wow. Families just aren't that big anymore.
I mean, like, that's a small child. That's a 4-year-old.
Yeah. So we realized, once again, let's try to do business smarter instead of harder. We're really trying to learn that lesson.
90 years.
Yeah, you've got a great lesson learned. We're with Annie and Tessa Diamond at Diamond Farm, walking around Wendell and heading into another one of these barns. Did you knock on the door?
Yes.
So that the chickens knew you were coming, or because somebody might have been in there?
If we just opened up the doors, the chickens are chicken, and so they run and hide.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes they will...
It will startle them.
It'll startle them, and they'll be... there may be a pileup, and one's underneath, can't breathe, and so they die.
Oh, we don't want that.
We're not going to go in here, but we'll be able to see how we collect the eggs.
Oh, here. So this is like the classic looking... There's these chickens sitting... laying over here. You can see all the other chickens hanging out in their room over there. They're not in cages. They got plenty of room running around in this barn. And then there are two chickens just laying eggs. Look at that.
Talking to the mic or the chicken?
I was talking to both.
Okay. Oh, they are.
So we collect the eggs twice a day. And so we have a cart that we push down and we collect them here. You can see we opened up these boards and go along and collect. And then so we have the top tier.
And the eggs drop right down there, so you can view the chickens laying them or the eggs themselves and gathering them.
Yeah.
Although there's a chicken in the one where the eggs usually are over there.
Right, yeah. So
which came first?
The chicken, come on.
How many eggs do you think you do a day here?
All of them.
If you had to guess, how many eggs are coming out of Diamond Farm every day?
I'll get back to you on that.
All right.
This looks kind of new. Is this like a new setup? We got an F-Steak award 2021, I think, and that's when we renovated this, because this had the cages in it, but we renovated it to be cage-free.
Nice. F-Steak Farm Security Infrastructure Grant. Look at all these little babies.
So these are baby chicks. These are baby layers. Years ago, we used to get 3,000 at a time. Now we have a batch of 500, and then we'll order a few for other people. And we are also licensed to sell started pullets.
We got some from you this spring. It was lovely.
Nice.
Very healthy birds. I do want to note just how clean everything is. Remarkably clean for the amount of poultry that we're seeing.
So at least once a week, the outdoor crew goes around, and we call it topping off. Wherever the chickens or turkeys eat and drink is usually where they poo. And so the crew will go along and with forks, pitchforks.
It's like a spork.
Spork, yeah.
Good Lord. And so they clean, they take all that out, put it in barrels, heft it out.
Then that goes into our compost.
Yay.
Yes.
All of the timber for this project is from your farm, the rough cut stuff?
Yeah, the rough cut. One thing that's neat, the birds that we just had, the baby layers, they were in what we call the brooder rooms. And so what we used to have to do is, I called it family bonding, which we still have plenty of family bonding. But we'd meet in the middle of the night when it was dark, catch all the birds in a separate coop in a separate building from this, and then put them in crates, and then we'd have to unload them and bring them into the coop. However, now what we do is when they're old enough and that coop is clean and set up for them, we just open the door, and they find their way in.
Smart. It's like you created like an escape room for chickens, where it's like once they hit a certain level, they enter the next phase, open that door that they come in here.
This was such a good idea to be able to just open up a door and let them wander in themselves for a couple of days, and then we push the rest in. While family bonding is good, I'm really glad we don't have to do that kind of anymore.
Waking up in the middle of the night and corralling chickens? Can't be very easy.
You have the instructions on the wall.
On how to do it?
Family bonding.
Some guidelines for how to raise the birds. So we're all literally on the same page.
Every household might benefit from that.
So on this side is the laying hens, and on this side is the... meat birds.
Not to be hyper-focused on the cleanliness, but there's no ammonia odor. I mean, it's all just so fresh.
And reminder, Jennifer Kaur owns a farm that deals with a lot of animals, so she knows.
Odors.
And look at these little guys.
So these are our broiler chicks. These are a week old. We get them every 2 weeks from the hatchery. They get shipped in from Pennsylvania. And then, so every 2 weeks we move them forward until the end.
which we saw at the beginning. So there's a, we're looking at where all the little chicks are. There's a little door that they'll lift up when they move to the next phase, and they'll go into another room over there.
Oh, wow, that is quite a view.
You can see the progression of age of chickens as you look through these doors.
This system is something you guys designed based on your experience.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you were saying, but we couldn't hear you because you were in the, there, that you get 14 sort of batches of these
yes.
little broilers, I think,
yeah.
Over the course of the year, and they yeah. process all the
May
way down through.
May through October, we have fresh chicken available, so we start getting the broiler chicks in March, the end of March, I believe. And then start processing them in April.
And then again, being done in October, so we clean out the coop before we get crazy at Thanksgiving, and then it just rests for the winter time, which is healthy for the buildings to be able to kill stuff.
And also, you can just laser focus on turkeys when everybody's thinking about turkeys.
Right.
Yeah.
She
yeah.
says with some exhaustion.
She knows that that time is coming soon.
But the laying is going on through the winter. Like, what else happens on the farm during those winter months where you don't necessarily have to worry about the meat birds?
It's definitely a lot slower outside. It's, you know, we have the laying birds year-round. We have the beef cattle year-round. The turkeys, though, you know, after Thanksgiving, we generally don't have them. But in the winter, kind of just like the odd jobs that have been pushed off because we haven't had time. So different repairs or renovations.
People are buying a lot more pot pies and a lot more soups and yeah. bone broth in the winter.
Good hearty winter food.
Yep. Yeah.
Do you, with all the different enterprises that you have, do you have different family members who sort of focus on different ones, or is it a whole team? You two focus
just
on
you
all
two.
Of them.
Annie and Tessa. Do it all.
Well, we certainly have help, but as my mom says, the buck stops with us.
Yeah. My brother Peter, who is 75 and trying to retire, is giving us usually about 3 days a week, sometimes more, sometimes less. He is still in charge of the lumber, so the sawmill, the compost, and the haying.
And I'm sorry, the beef came later after the poultry. When
1990s?
It was in the 90s. We had historically always raised one beef for ourselves. We would dress it ourselves. But when people wanted more and more, you know, the turkeys and the meat birds, we were like, hey, you know, we can do the beef because we used to raise hay and sell it. And so we were like, let's just, you know, shift one more time.
So how many beef cattle are you doing now?
Anywhere from like 16 to 22.
Uh-huh. So that's a decent sized herd. Yeah.
Reasonable herd. I love this covered walk. This
yeah.
is it's a such a like staff-centered decision.
Yeah, if it's raining and pouring rain out here, and you got to go from the broiler barn to wherever this barn is over here, yeah.
We didn't always have this. And so when we built this, it was hilarious because we would, during ice, we would literally be pushing it and then getting our feet, you know, and this is coming up. The egg cart
yeah.
full of eggs, getting it so that we it was hilarious. It's
not in the moment.
Yeah, now you have like a covered tunnel,
yep.
poured concrete, all that, so make it easy rolling for the eggs. Speaking of eggs, there's been a lot of talk about the economy and the price of eggs, and we've seen the price of eggs go up and down and things like that. Eggs are still pretty expensive. Talk about pricing eggs and what it means to be a local egg producer and how to be competitive when there are all these other types of eggs on the market available.
Well, we haven't raised our egg prices in a couple of years. We try to be competitive, but there's prices. You know, everything is increasing, so it's hard to do that. I mean, we're definitely not like the just grocery store eggs that you're going to find. We raise these ourselves. They're packed. We do everything ourselves. And they're then delivered to the stores by us. One important thing, I'll bring you over to the egg cartons. If you go to the grocery store...
Turning on the eggs machine.
So if you go to the grocery store and you look at the back of the egg carton, it generally says where it's... It normally says distributed by or produced for. However, on the back of our egg cartons, it says produced and packed by Diamond Farm, Wendell, Massachusetts. You know that our eggs are from us. It was interesting. I was somewhere recently and picked up a dozen of eggs. It's a little habit of mine when I go into the grocery store, just curious about eggs. So I looked at the back of the carton, and I think it said Illinois, Chicago, Illinois. I don't know what farms are in Chicago. Who knows how long it took them to get from Chicago to here versus we pack them, you get them.
You already ask how many dozen eggs you're producing a year?
He tried to. Oh,
she dodged the question.
Yeah. A year? He wanted a day.
I wanted a day. She couldn't even do a day. We could extract it.
Listen, no, I do write it down. So we process eggs every three days, so or 3 days a week.
And a notebook.
Andy's got a notebook, and a good old-fashioned notebook with writing in it.
So this is, you know, what we make each time. So Tessa's going to add it up.
So today I got 300 dozen.
300 dozen.
And that represents 3 days of laying.
Yeah.
Okay.
So like 100 dozen a day.
Do you see that climate or temperature has any effect on how much your hens are laying or anything like that?
So one thing that we have, because our birds are inside, they have the safety and the control of the coops. However, there's only so much control we have over the ventilation and the heat. If it gets really, really hot outside, we can do our best to make sure that it's cool enough in there. So we do see some fluctuation, but I will say it's different than if we had them outside.
With the turkeys, with the weather, definitely, like really bad rainstorms, we can lose 100 turkeys. You know, so people go, oh, you know, they want their animals raised outside because it's like, oh, so cool.
Until they're dead.
Do you have predator problems with the outside birds?
Like, a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. I want you guys to see this because it's cool.
Annie wants us to see this incredible Willy Wonka Rube Goldberg egg machine. Annie took this crazy suction cup that has 30 suction cups, sucked up 30 eggs, put them on this conveyor belt. The conveyor belt is moving them down under this water where they're being washed, and then they are going through a tube that I don't see what's happening in there, but they come out the other end, and they're
polished so that they don't have any, like, other residual stuff on the egg, because it does come out of the butt of a chicken.
That's true. A cloaca.
I want you to go in where Tessa is, because that's the dark room.
It's a little tiny room that's part of the conveyor belt. All right, I'm in here with Tessa.
So in here, there's a light that shines up. You can see, not necessarily through the eggs, but it shines and shows you if there's any imperfections, if there's an air bubble, blood spot, any cracks.
And you'll be able to see it? I haven't seen anything yet.
Well, you got to look harder.
I'm going to let police come in here so you can see what's going on, too. Now Jennifer Kaur is helping Annie pack the eggs into the egg cartons, which you're doing all by hand. No fancy machine for that.
I'm falling woefully behind.
They're sorting them into grade A jumbo eggs, grade A extra large eggs, and grade A large eggs. And Annie's like a human machine doing this so fast.
They call me Fingers. I do.
Did you guys design the system?
We got this from National Poultry Equipment. And we actually have a new table on order that they will be sending to us that we actually got with a grant from Harold Grinspoon Foundation.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Excellent.
An improvement that we did last year was for this table, for this grading table, we have a digital weighing system. Before it was the old-fashioned.
Just feel it?
No.
By weight.
It was done by weight.
That we could adjust manually.
But this, well, I'll show you on the other side. So what happens, the eggs come on this belt, get weighed in this one spot, and the machine remembers that specific egg where it is and then pushes it out as it goes down the line versus before. It was this manual weight that it would literally go at the spot of the jumbos, and it would, is it too heavy, too light, then, you know, go on or get kicked off. So we're getting fancy here.
Fancy.
To me, it seems like magic.
Science is magic.
Me too.
Yeah. It's true.
So now we're in a cooler that has dozens and dozens of boxed eggs. 30 dozen boxes, and there's probably 30 boxes. Who does all the egg handling and packing? Is it just you two, or are there other, like, when it's an egg day, to like how many people are in there working?
About three people. It's generally me, my Aunt Mary, who is 83.
Wow.
I don't know when she's going to give it up, but maybe one day. And then one of my staff will help us. But we need at least three people on the machine.
This is the chicken freezer. It used to be the only freezer we had. And then in 2020, we received a FSIG grant to do a larger cooler, a larger freezer cooler. So it's awesome. And we use it most of the time as a freezer. But during Thanksgiving, we can get everything out of it and turn it into a cooler. And it's so wonderful to have everything in one place.
Yeah.
We used to rent a trailer body from Squash Trucking. and, you know, we'd be putting an order together and be like, ah, damn, where are the 12-pounders, you know, and running around. So now it's wonderful to have everything here.
We've heard about a couple investments made through FSIG, the Food Security Infrastructure Grant Program, which are taxpayer dollars that move through the Department of Agriculture and move out to farms and have been very transformative since COVID is when that emerged.
Absolutely.
And then you also mentioned Harold Grinspoon Foundation, which is offering $2,500 grants to local farms specific for infrastructure and equipment investment, also game-changing, really, across our area.
Absolutely. Before we had this freezer, right now you'd be stepping on the ground. Like, this is a whole new dock that we have, and this freezer is huge. So imagine all of this stuff somehow fitting in there.
Yeah, wow.
It would be Tetris. Climbing over things.
Could you not use pallets then before?
Is correct. That
else? Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
It'd be like somebody had ordered 18-pound turkey, and it'd be like, okay, I think they're in that corner, and literally we'd be climbing or sliding, crawling over lots of frozen product to find that 18-pound turkey.
Yeah.
So it's just, it has been life-changing for us to have this money given to us. It's been amazing.
And that's all since 2020, is that?
We did this in 2020.
The first round of FSIG.
I also appreciate that over here on your packing table is a bottle of ibuprofen. You're really taking care of everybody.
Yeah.
So in here, we buy local flour.
From ground up, we went and visited them.
Yep. So we, you know, we'll get a pallet or two at a time and store it in here and then bring it up to the cooking room when we need it. These are festival legs that we're going to start pre-roasting for the Garlic Fest.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So that's, we save the really big ones.
Yep.
We're trying to get more organized as we are able to now that we have space. And so one of the things is for, like, the festivals to be able to separate the large turkey legs, because people, when they buy a turkey leg for X amount of dollars, it's nice to give them a big one.
Oh, totally. There are only more Renaissance fairs in the area than... You know.
So you can see, like, these are turkey wings, turkey backs, so that as I'm doing the cooking and know that, okay, I need more broth than I need turkey meat, I can do the wings or the backs. We have ice machines down at the dressing room, and so we package up starting, I think it's going to be pretty soon in September, we're going to start packaging, saving the ice for Thanksgiving time instead of buying it.
Mm.
Very expensive. There's been a few years that we've run out of ice and we've had to buy it, and it's not a nice check to write.
No bet.
I do have turkey necks.
Oh, okay. I have folks who want turkey necks, and I thought I was out of them.
Really, glad we went on this tour.
I am thinking about the scale of what we're seeing here. I mean, you're feeding a lot of people. There's a lot of protein moving out of here.
It's massive.
I mean, I'll just say from an observational standpoint, it's so much larger than even I realized, and I felt like I was familiar with you all.
Yeah, same. So.
We deliver our products, let's see, our pot pies, our soups, our eggs. We have a what we call a big route that we go through Pioneer Valley twice a month. We do that. And so we'll go, my staff is actually out today doing that, Quentin. He's delivering to places like Atkins, Brookfield Farm,
River Valley. Greenfield Market.
So we try to get as far as we can. We're actually looking to go east. So we'll see, you know, how far we're able to go. But we try to get our products out to as many people as possible.
I will note that we have found your chicken pot pies at the Northfield, like Mims. So I also...
Pot pies?
Maybe, sorry. Yes. And I just appreciate that they're available at smaller markets, too, in rural communities.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Not that we're far from Turner's, but I get your eggs at Food City all the time.
Yeah. I appreciate that.
One thing I love about dealing with these small places is we don't have to do a shelving. You know, like there's some customers that, you know, they wanted us to pay for either testing or shelving. And I was like, $1,800 a year is a lot of money.
Yeah.
They were like, just pass it on to the customer. I'm like, I don't think I'm going to do business with you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I've mentioned many times now how there are no odors and how clean it is, but it is also beautiful here.
Yeah, we happen to be here on a beautiful day. The grass looks gray. There's birds flying all over the place. It's
lovely,
huge farm, rolling hills.
Turkey pen, which also we use as a cow pen, but so when the cows are birthing, we like to have them in a more enclosed space. There have been years ago that we like lost a baby calf because it was born in the stream, and it drowned. Yeah. So we, when it's getting closer to birthing, we take and we put them in a smaller pen so we can, it'd be easier to check. There's been many times in the past before we started doing that that we would literally be searching the woods, and there's a lot of woods out here that they have access to. And I remember finding, we were out looking, and I found the calf, and Terry, my husband, was with me, and at the same time we both go, "Hey, I found it," and the mom had had twins, but we didn't know that.
Oh, wow.
You know, we're constantly trying to see what we can do to make the raising better. You had asked about predators earlier. So as you can
see a turkey vulture right there.
Yeah, they're right there.
So the regular turkey vultures are one thing. They will eat the dead. We have a beautiful buffet down there. Most people think of it as the compost windrow, but it really is a buffet for the wild animals. But the black-headed vultures, they will attack living things. We have seen them kill turkeys. We have seen them try to attack a baby calf.
Whoa.
You know, there was a calf, a mom that was in distress. And when they're calving, I usually go for a walk and just check everything after dinner. And there was a mom calf that had a prolapsed uterus. And an eagle came down to start dealing with the mom. It was awful. And then there were just these black-headed vultures around the baby calf when Terry and I came down and shoot them around. And we ended up by saving that mom. It took like 8 of us and maybe about 4 hours,
yeah,
5 hours
vet
with
the
vet. Mind-boggling. I just have such the utmost respect for vets. Holy cow, after being involved with that, it was, man.
You know, indeed, the uterus is supposed to be in the body.
Yeah. Yes. We learned about that on your farm.
Yes. Yeah. Can I ask about the array of farm machinery that I'm looking at in the sheep pen? Because there's like a row of older farm machinery that's just kind of out.
Is that about along the road just to look cool, to remind everybody that this farm is 90 years old?
I think my uncles have put that there. I honestly don't know. Sometimes they add to it. But I hope we don't add too much more to it.
Yeah.
So right now this is another batch of turkeys.
The turkeys, on the other hand, unlike the chickens, are super curious every time we come around.
It's the coolest thing to be able to walk around and you turn around and there's 900 turkeys behind you.
These turkeys are about 3 weeks old. So we won't put them out on pasture until they're a bit hardier. If we put them out right now, it wouldn't be too vulnerable.
Plus, we saw all those vultures out there.
Yeah. So we'll wait until 8 weeks minimum. We like to go 10 if we can. All the rain that we've gotten recently, if we had turkeys out on range at that point, I don't know how many we would have lost.
Oh, wow.
And it feels like we should mention those turkeys at 3 weeks are, it feels like about the size that you would see chickens at like 6 or 7.
Did you have to do that?
Sorry.
You don't even notice that one.
I didn't either. I'm so sorry.
She said 6, 7 again.
Oh. It wasn't on purpose.
They were a little smaller than, you know, what our broiler chicks are.
Yeah.
But yeah, it in terms of the size.
Yeah.
Yes, I understand what you're saying.
Here are the cows.
Good morning, ladies.
So this is a cow barn, and we got a grant to help pay for most of this in 2015 from the Soil NRCS.
Yeah.
And so this has been amazing because up there where that camper is used to be our old pen. It was a three-sided barn and a corral. And during the spring, it was awful. The cows' hooves would be in mud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'd do the best we could with cleaning it out. But there's the weather is the weather. So this has been amazing. It's very easy to clean. It has a cement floor, so it's very easy to clean. And we feed the cows there. And one of the reasons we got the grant was to be able to have the help with the compost, so we can use the bedding for that.
So for context, that's the Natural Resource Conservation Service. It's a USDA program that has different individual programs that support farms with infrastructure and other sort of conservation practices.
Nope, someone's noticed a snap.
Tessa's got some food. And here they all come. Stampede.
When we were building this barn, my brother Eddie, who passed away in 2016, he was an incredible builder, as you can see by most of the stuff on the farm. It is sturdy.
Yeah.
Okay, so he was our top guy. So my husband, Terry, and Eddie are on the roof putting, you know, doing something up there. And across the stream is our private family cemetery. Anyway, Terry's talking to Eddie, and he says, hey, you know, you got a retirement plan? You know, like, what is your, you on the Diamond Farm retirement plan? And Terry kind of, or Eddie looks at Terry, and he points to the cemetery.
Little gallows
anyway,
humor?
It was kind of, yeah. There's a little tribute to Ed.
I saw that up there. It's Eddie Diamond, and it has a hammer on this beautiful, sturdy barn that he built.
And this is one of my favorite views on the farm. When we come for a walk to check the animals, again, after dinner, that doorway right there, you know, if you can imagine the sun setting, so the colors, it's just gorgeous.
Did you make the opening there on purpose?
No.
Oh, wow.
Is that just so the cows can get in and out?
Yep.
So the corral area, we have that if we have a sick calf or a sick cow, we can put them in there, have the vet come, we'll look at them, whatnot, versus before we would have to kind of jerry-rig something.
Tell us about the party, like when it is, when it starts.
Yes.
Because your 90th birthday here at Diamond Farm is coming right up.
Yes, September 12th is the day we have chosen to celebrate, and from 10 to 2... we will have sawmill demonstrations, compost turning demonstrations. We're going to have our tractors and backhoe and everything out here. So folks, you know, kids love to get on and have their picture taken with the different things like that. Yeah, kids of all ages. And so we're going to do that. We'll have music and then crafters on the lawn. And we will have food available for sale.
And it's free.
Nice.
The party is free, and we're working on having cupcakes.
Well, congratulations on 90 years, third generation farm right here in Wendell at Diamond Farm. Like I said, I buy your eggs all the time, but how much really goes on behind the scenes here is phenomenal to have witnessed. So thanks for the tour.
Thank you very much. This has been wonderful. It's always good to see you.